I thank you very much, everybody. Welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. You can find us on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. As Celia said, my name is Gina Valeria. I'm the Assistant News Director at KGO Radio. I teach broadcast and multimedia at San Francisco State University. Today, we are going to take a closer look at the art of Kehinde Wiley, which you can see at the Contemporary Jewish Museum now through May 27th. World Stage Israel is part of a bold series exploring the Black diaspora. Features Israeli and Ethiopian Jews, Israeli Arabs, as well as historical Jewish textiles that helped inspire Wiley in his work. To help us navigate and explore these works is Karen Tsujimoto here with us today, curator of the Contemporary Jewish Museum, former senior curator at the Oakland Museum. Karen has more than three decades of experience and has curated some pivotal exhibitions, including Images of America and Modern Photography at the Museum of Modern Art, and for artists including Peter Volkus, John Brown, David Ireland, and Dorothea Lange. In 2006, Tsujimoto was named Oakland Museum of California Employee of the Year by the City of Oakland, and she also received the annual award in the visual arts from the Northern California Chapter of Art Table. Please welcome Karen Tsujimoto.
Thank you. I thought I would first begin by showing an 8-minute videotape on Kehinde Wiley so that you have a sense of the artist and his work and his working methodology. And then I'll follow up by giving you a little bit of background on Kehinde's life and work, because I think that'll help you understand what he's trying to achieve through his World Stage project.
I'm just going to do a quick refresh here.
This has been a learning process from the beginning. I thought I knew about Israel. I thought I had a very healthy understanding of what to expect when I arrived there. But I didn't. Each location that I choose in the world stage comes about because I wanted to mine where the world is right now and chart the presence of black and brown people throughout the world. I chose China for a certain reason, Brazil for a certain reason, Nigeria. All of these countries are beginning to become features of this global conversation. One of the interesting features of Israeli society is that there's so many aspects of the diaspora. Back during the 70s, there were several movements that were designed to embrace the full diaspora of Jews, including the Ethiopian Jewish population. Many of them had been mistreated in their home country, and there was also a large level of suspicion around their return to Israel. That, however, has changed, and their presence is very firmly rooted now in modern Israel, but it's also something that I think is oftentimes overlooked.
I want to say thank you very much for having us here.
My pleasure, my brother.
The really extraordinary day that we spent with Cao Kidan and with all of the musicians that surround his group.
Give it to me, Me come from Zion, Rastaman, we that locks fight like lion with gold, not pot knocks. I'm not trying, this is my style, I just stuck.
My name is Cao Kidan, and I was born in Ethiopia. I came to Israel when I was 4 years old.
Your music is about what?
It's about culture, it's about who are you, you know, the roots. It's about not forget yourself, where you came from, in the fight for your right, you know? It's about equality, to be equal.
I think there's a strong correlation between being on the margins of society as a person of color in America and that which we see in the streets of Israel.
It's very hard to be in your daily life as a black person here in Israel. When somebody tells you, you're not worth something, if you believe him, this is your mind believing. Mm-hmm. If you change your mind, you can... He cannot do anything to you.
Addis Ababa to Tel Aviv. Came from Africa to the Middle East, cause I believe and got dread on my head, but I'm Rasta in my blood. And why we need religion? For there is one God. I said I'm born in the village, but I run this town. You can see me smiling, but I am acting like a clown. Ethiopian people rise, we never ever falling down. Negative when the meown no gaze. Father Zion, Mama Africa. Africa, we loving ya.
Okay, inside me, in the hip hop, I ain't got no fear. You know, when I got the hip hop, it's like, you know, I'm fearless.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I got a weapon.
Eyes, chin. Good.
Yeah. Every time I travel throughout the world, I start to realize there's a certain essence to Black American culture that has become globalized. And there's a sense in which every country finds their own specific response to something that started very early on in the 1970s in the Bronx. To hear the sounds of Amharic fused with Hebrew, fused with French and English, but also concerning the look and feel of a very Black American aesthetic, but telling the story of what it means to come from Ethiopia and to find your homeland in Israel. A very interesting way of dealing with history, but also dealing with how one puts oneself gracefully into the world.
אז תגיד לי למה העולם הזה משתגע, אתה זה שלמעלה יודע, לא יודע כמה.
I was in one of the nightclubs in Tel Aviv. The type of music culture that was being celebrated there was around hip-hop, but it was also around reggae as well. I mean, that you saw young white Israelis with dreadlocks down their backs fraternizing with Arab Israelis and Ethiopian Jews, all in the same room. This is something that I definitely don't necessarily see when I turn on the television every day and think about what a night in Israel is like, what a night in Tel Aviv is like.
Yeah.
Today we're in Jerusalem, and we're doing a little bit of shopping. We're trying to find decorative patterns. You find that there's definitely moments of Judaica, but there's also a lot of Arab-Israeli patterns and influences. There's Islamic decorative traditions that we're starting to see all over the marketplace.
In this body of work, I'll be able to marry this very long and beautiful tradition with these painfully young and present models. This was an opportunity to broaden the conversation, to say yes to the presence of Arab Israelis, for example, to say yes to the presence of Mizrahi and Ashkenazi Jews as well. What you'll find is that in certain paintings, the decorative component reaches forward and demands to be in the present tense just as much as the figure is. And so you've got this friction between beginning, middle, and end, the sandwiching between the model who stands in the painting and the decorative field, which wants to move itself forward as well. It functions almost in the same sense in which one has to fashion their own sense of self within time.
The head must be proud. Proud.
What I seek to do in some sense is to take a snapshot of what it feels like to walk through the streets of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And of course, every viewer has a different response to those paintings. So in the same sense in which I'm presenting to you this very fractured sense of what it felt like to be in Israel, you're bringing your own contingent set of values and beliefs and histories that will then engage that painting. So what is the truth that's being told? Well, there is none. It's simply a story of a story of a story that attempts to approximate a lived moment.
עם אנחנו קולים, אנחנו נמצאים בכל מקום, באים ומייצגים כל הזמן ירוק צהוב אדום, ממריאים כמו אווירון, עם סטייל כמו בנזין ערבי, סופים את המיקרופון.
אמור למיקרופון נגרוס, אמור פיתן וסינובו, ורארי את דורותו פובר בוז'ט ולדיסקו, ויתור מונסות אבק מומם לפיתן ויהיו אונטול, און נתן תות ללומיין דה אטו, תור מונדיגו, ללום סוסון תוסתם, אמור סיוסן האוניבו, שבריס תוסי פיתן פר אבק לפויסון זו לקו, בזמן פיתן בונדו פובר תומבי תולי מצ'ו, במה ובוז'ט דפס והפרסה למאסטרו,
משתתים על רמקולים, אנחנו נמצאים בכל מקום, תומבים ומי
Well, there we go. Thank you. I hope that gave you a bit of a sense of Kinde's work. But before I begin to explain a little more about his art, I wanted to thank Celia Mitchell and Gina and the new staff that I met here at the Commonwealth Club for their kindness and generosity as we prepared for this program. As you can probably tell, Kinde is quite an articulate, worldly person, and he has many quotes that I found very provocative, but this is one that I especially love, having worked in the museum profession for quite some time. I try to use a black body in my work to counter the absence of that body in museum spaces throughout the world. This, to me, really gets to the heart of what he's doing as a black artist traveling the world. And also, in a nutshell, to my own way of thinking, what he's doing is trying to create a conversation between art history and contemporary life, especially life as experienced by black and brown hip-hop young men in major cultural centers and metropolises around the world. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kihinde's life because I think it's very informative to understand where he is at this point in his professional career. He is born in 1977, a California native, born in South Central LA, which means he's now about 36 years old. And given his age, he is quite successful, which I think is a very happy experience considering that he came from a rather poor lower-class family in Los Angeles, raised as the youngest of six children by a single mother. One of the things that Kinde's mother made sure about her children, that they had an enriched and educated life, keeping them off the streets as much as she could. She herself was an academic, studied languages, African culture, and it was very important for her, as I say, to provide a cultural enriching experience for her children. Among the experiences that Kehinde especially, I think, gravitated to were the free art classes that he took in Los Angeles and at the local community colleges. And also, he speaks very poignantly about as a youth going to the many museums, and especially the Hunting Museum in Pasadena. I'm not sure if many of you are aware of it, but it's a very grand palatial institution in Pasadena that where grand portraits, European portraits in gilded frames installed against silk brocade walls with very high-class European kind of museum. And this is an experience that greatly touched Kinde in his formative years, coming from, as I say, an environment that didn't easily provide that. So he talks about how he was greatly influenced by the grand portraits of the Baroque painters, such as Peter Paul Rubens, the 18th century portraitist Thomas Gainsborough, French court painters, to Napoleon, such as Jacques-Louis David, traveled around the L.A. County, you know, Pasadena Art Museum, experienced the many riches that were available to him. The other thing I like to point out is that in terms of these formative experiences, that his mother, in order to provide for the family, also had a secondhand store where she sold used furniture and clothes. And Kende has talked about how he and his siblings would go out and find old Rococo, fake Rococo furniture or fake, you know, tapestries and bring them in to the store for his mother to sell. He talks about both kind of the Huntington experience and the high-end elitist experience and also his childhood experiences merging, I think, a sensibility and encouraging a sensibility that dealt with grandeur, decoration, opulence, and this is something that he subsequently brings to his work. After graduating from high school in Los Angeles, Kende attended the San Francisco Art Institute, and this is why we're very excited to have the exhibition at the Contemporary Jewish Museum, because in many ways this is a reunion for him to come back to the Bay Area, and we had a grand festive party with a lot of San Francisco Art Institute friends and colleagues. During this period, he talks also about going around to Berkeley and doing a lot of research at San Francisco State University, going to public lectures and absorbing as much as he could as a young aspiring artist. One of the things I find very interesting that he talks about and I think was influential to his paintings is a book by Richard Dyer from 1997. It's called White: Essays on Race and Culture. And one of the things that Kende learned from studying this book is that over the centuries that whiteness has always been associated, over the years has become to be associated with purity, light, rationality, and the sublime, whereas blackness represents the opposite, the unknown, irrationality, and the disenfranchised. I think, to my way of thinking, I would like to think that Kende agrees with it. It raised his kind of social consciousness about issues concerning the color of a person and what color can represent. Following his graduation from the Art Institute, he went on to Yale University, where he received his MFA, and then moved to New York, where he had his very pivotal artistic experience. He had a year-long residency at the Studio Museum in Harlem, which is right in the thick of the active and vibrant street life of Harlem. And it was just quite honestly mind-blowing to him. He was just fascinated by the young hip men walking around with their bling and their jerseys and their attitude and their hip-hop attitude. And this is, I think, what really intrigued Kende about black and brown men and how they find their sense of self-esteem. And in fact, he's talked about how hip-hop culture is kind of a survival technique for the disenfranchised, as he sees it, by these young black and brown men. He began this process of what he calls street casting, intrigued by these young men that he found on the street who would actually go out and, you know, identify somebody that had bravura, presence, some attitude, and ask if they would like to model for him. He treated them very professionally, and this is where he began his series on and first established his reputation. He would actually pay them as professional models and bring them into his studio, and over the course of time, he would allow them to go through his history books, his art history books, and that he would say, well, why don't you choose a pose that you like? Do you want to, you know, do a blue boy pose like Gainsborough? And some of the men actually chose poses after historical saints, Napoleonic grand portraits. And he would, as you could see, he would pose them, lift your chin higher, have more attitude, and then photograph them. So photography is very much a part of his work, a basis for his work. And this was the series that, as I say, established his reputation. Subsequently, he began to travel beyond Harlem, and this is when the World Stage Series starts in 2006. And when Kende uses the title World Stage, he literally means that. His studio is in Brooklyn, but his main also in Beijing, and most recently he's talking about opening a studio in Senegal. But he has also traveled to Sri Lanka, India, Brazil, Nigeria, and let me see, there are some other places, but literally a world traveler. When I was working on the exhibition with him, we were trying to contact him to ask him some questions, and he was in Czechoslovakia, unattainable. And then when he left after the opening, he was planning to go to Jamaica. And I think 6 months ago, he was also in northern Africa visiting Casablanca, Tunisia, Gabon, the Congo, the Cameroon, street casting again, looking for models that he can bring into his artwork. Now, one of the things, so what we're focusing on at the Contemporary Jewish Museum are his paintings of men from Israel. And I have on the slide here, on the screen here, an example of one of his paintings on the left. Unfortunately, the scale is inaccurate. The painting is actually about 10 feet high. It's beautiful. And on the right is a historical Jewish paper cut that's probably 20 by, or 30 inches high, 20 inches wide. And it is the background for that painting on the left. This is one of the things that that I think is very intriguing about the works at our museum, is how he is merging historical Jewish artifacts with contemporary hip-hop culture. And when you walk through the exhibition, you'll see how he's though modified the colors, the vibrancy of the work to highlight both the decorative aspects of the paper cut, but also have his model stand out in his grandeur and glory, and with that, as I say, that very provocative attitude. One of the things I also like to mention is how very conscious Wiley was about wanting to depict Arab Jews, Ethiopian Jews, and Israeli Jews. I know that in this particular time period that there's you know, some unsettledness, but when I talked to him and when he gave his comments at the press conference, he was very clear that he's not interested in raising challenging political issues. He really, to my way of thinking, is trying to find the positive and the good in the world at a time where it's very challenging. In fact, one of the on the frames, they're very unique, but on the frames of the Jewish Israelis, there are the Ten Commandments written in Hebrew. And when there are the frames for the Arab Jews, he has inscribed in Hebrew Rodney King's words from the 1991 incident, "Can't we all get along?" So with that, I don't want to take too much time. We're ready to go with questions and Q&A.
So first, thank you so much. Let's give a hand.
Oh.
I'm going to pull my notes out here. So thank you, Karen. So my first question is, I actually want to ask you, how did you discover Kehinde Wiley and what drew you to him?
Well, we often work with the Contemporary Jewish Museum. I mean, excuse me. We often work with the Jewish Museum in New York and have a great collaborative relationship with them. And we were talking about working together on the exhibition, which was very exciting for us. But I think what especially drew me and my colleagues to the show is that we're trying to bring new perspectives on Jewish life, culture, history, kind of a 21st century perspective, and in a bigger and richer way. And I thought this would be a very beautiful and thought-provoking exhibition as we address different issues, as I say, through that Jewish lens.
Yeah, absolutely. I have many friends who are Jewish, but I don't know much about the culture, and this is something completely new and beautiful to me. So what, as people have gone through the exhibit, and you know, what's some of the feedback you've received? How are people responding to this?
It actually very positively. One of the things that I was very excited about with the exhibition is to bring in a younger audience and to bring in an audience of color and to really open the doors of the museum much wider. And I think this is really one of the long-range goals of the museum now. Because without young people being interested in coming, that's our future, and if we don't engage them, we're at a great loss. And I think also, to, as I say, to open the doors wider.
Yeah, and it's fascinating that I'd like to talk a little bit about the idea of African American culture and how it's permeating out through mm-hmm. the world, but also here in America, it's permeating through the youth. You know, it's not just black people who like mm-hmm. hip hop. It's you know, I teach at SF State, and mm-hmm. every single student in my class, it's their favorite music. And so are you seeing that? Are you seeing more young people come in? Are you seeing all different types of people come in?
Yes. We have a much younger audience that has mm-hmm. come in. I would like to see more. But I think that at our opening, it was absolutely fabulous. Very gratifying to see young and old, all the colors from white to black, and everything in between. Yeah. And this is what we're hoping to achieve through Kehinde's exhibition.
There's a lot of mixture of all kinds of things, textiles, quotes, words, history in Kehinde's work. Let's talk about textiles. How did he connect with textiles in his life, and why does he choose to represent that in his work?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you just generically that whenever Kehinde works on a series of paintings, say, for example, on the series of men from China, he will select fabrics and textile designs and patterns that are very identifiably Asian or Chinese. So if you look at some of the backgrounds, you'll see chrysanthemums, Asian motifs. For the series of paintings that he did on Senegalese, they are African Senegalese patterns that, and the colors, the earth tone colors. So he's very specific about integrating historical culture into his paintings. At the same time, he's painting young, hip, contemporary men.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fascinating. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. We are talking with Karen Tsujimoto, curator of the Contemporary Jewish Museum, about Kehinde Wiley and his work, which will be there till May 27th. I'm Gina Bellaria. One of a listener in our audience asked, is he himself Jewish? And if not, how does he know the meanings of some of the iconographs that he uses?
Kehinde, to the best of my knowledge, is not Jewish, but he's a very thoughtful, considered, and very smart artist that is like a vacuum, sucking up culture, information, well-read. He does work with, staff that help him interpret. He actually has quite a contingent, so when he goes around street casting, he has four or five people with him and an interpreter that speaks the native language. But I would say that his incorporation of the Jewish historical paper cuts, patterns from Torah art curtains, etc., he talks about them more as a decorative element and not necessarily, it's not a priority for him to totally understand the symbolism or the Hebrew letters, although, he's aware of what they say in his paintings, what they symbolize in his paintings.
Okay.
But it's more the decorative effect that he's after.
Got it. So the subject is what it is, and then the decoration, although the decoration does speak volumes.
Yes.
You know, what do you think he's trying to say with some of the decorations? He mentioned in the video that some of them are,
because they creep into the foreground almost like embracing the models. He talks about, as a painter, he's interested in some formal aspects, background, foreground, integrating the two. For example, if you think about 18th or 19th century painters, portrait painters, you see the king or the aristocratic figure kind of in the foreground with a fake landscape. in the background? Well, Kinde is trying to merge the two, so the background is as important as the model in the foreground. He's also talked a lot about how, with this decorative element, that he sees it as being a somewhat maligned element in the fine arts, often equated with women's work. Mm. And he speaks about how he wants to bring the beauty and the decorative into his work and give it equal authority, much as he wants to bring black and brown men into his painting and give them equal presence.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then, so that makes sense. And then what do you think he's trying to say with the creeping, with the idea that the decorative elements, which he says are just decorative, are creeping? What is he trying to say there?
I don't know. Well, creeping has a bit of a little cynical connotation. I personally wouldn't see it that way. I think it's perhaps, you know, looking at this beautiful decorative element just surrounding these men. It's actually fascinating because as I study the paintings, I can see how some decorative leafy elements from the frame actually are carried on into the painting. So he's really seeing it as a full, even though it's two-dimensional, kind of a spatial experience.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
I'm fascinated because for so many people who are artists, every single piece of it has some sort of significance. And I love that for Kehinde, he's trying to do something with bringing out black and brown experience and bringing in work that may be considered women's work and trying to make a statement. And yet it's also about, wow, artistically I can do, he's playing too, which I love.
No, he's a much more, there's many layers to his work that I think people, the more you take the time to look at his work and think about it, it's like peeling an onion back. You know, it is how he's taking history, contemporary life, merging them, you know, men and female work and merging them, and decoration and hip-hop culture and jeans and basketball jerseys and merging them.
Yeah.
And just, you know, tweaking them, weaving them together.
And one of those peels on the onion, I actually have a few questions about the words, the quotes that he uses. So I'm going to ask a few of these questions. One person in the audience wants to talk about the "Can't We All Get Along" in Hebrew on some of the paintings. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I guess, you know, commonsensically we can say, well, of course, that was a big moment in black American history, but I'd love if you can address that a little bit about why he might have chosen that and then why he might have translated it to Hebrew.
Well, I think it was very, you know, growing up, you know, South Central A, when you, 1991, young teenager, and seeing what was going on in, you know, in terms of racial conflict, that I think that's something that he's aware of, although he's not totally vociferous about it. I can't help but think somehow it hasn't affected him some way. And so when he raises that consciousness into his paintings from this, you know, from Israel, I think it has to do with the whole issue of "Can't We All Get Along?"
Yeah.
Palestinians, you know, Israelis, the Arabs, you know, Jews, and it may be my simplistic understandings of his work, but I do feel that about his work. And when you hear him talk about it, it's in a very positive way, meeting these young men, giving them stature and presence in a way that they've not had before.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about how he poses them in just a moment. There are a few more questions about the words. There's a viewer who wants to know, what is the source of the quote, "From this side, a living spirit"? Do you happen to know?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
That's okay. There was another source question, which we can probably look up for the listener.
Let me go back. Was that a Hebrew quote in one of the reproductions?
I think so.
Okay.
And then there's another quote, "How are all of us able to live alone?"
Okay. Well, all of the words that appear in Kehinde's paintings are in Hebrew, and I think he's very aware of what he's writing in the corners or across, and you know, in his medallions. Even though, as I say, it's not a primary focus of his work, and I think, in fact, that with those translations, it shows that he is questioning how people get along in the world.
Mm-hmm. And he's painting that himself, yes?
Yes. Well, actually, he has a group of studio assistants.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. I know that it's a bit of a provocative question or comment or experience for many, but he works from photographs, and then he has studio assistants. He works to help paint the backgrounds. He works with the computer to figure out what kind of backgrounds he wants, what colors he wants, heighten the orange, pull back the blue. But he himself talks about how he paints the figures himself.
Okay.
Since his early days, he's always loved painting the human figure. And if you see the works in person, you'll see how he takes oil paint and just magically creates these beautiful portraits that have inner luminosity, just amazing. If you get close to the painting, you'll see just a swipe of blue, baby blue, but it's really the reflection on this man's face. And it's amazing to me how, whether it's Picasso, Matisse, Jackson Pollock, or Kenda Wiley, they take the same material and they do totally different, they create totally different experiences.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the subjects. There was, as was prominent in the video, he poses them, he mm-hmm. helps. And I'm wondering, it came to my mind, the natural, or catching people in our natural environment versus posing them, how does that impact the experience that the viewer of the painting has assessing these subjects?
Well, I think that's up to the viewer.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
For example, this one on the screen, Alyosha Shtok, he just has tremendous attitude as far as I'm concerned. Now, that may have been prompted by Kehinde encouraging him, as you saw in the video. He told when raise your head higher, chin higher, look proud. And that's, I think, what he's trying to do in his painting is to have these young men feel a sense of pride.
Okay. And yeah, it's interesting watching him in the videos and then seeing some of the paintings, and it was very profound. And I found fascinating, was wondering if you can address the idea that he's trying to, you know, he talked a lot about disenfranchisement, or if a quote from one of the subjects, you know, you're going to believe it if they keep telling you this.
Yeah.
And that's an experience that many African Americans
mm-hmm.
have.
Right.
But it seems to also be relevant in other parts of the world as well. And so, you know, is he also trying to impact his subjects as he impacts the world with his art?
I think so. For example, when he was I'll go back. There was in the video, there was the musician, the rapper Kalkidon Mashasha, who was talked about how he's an Ethiopian Jew, moved to Israel, and felt very disenfranchised as a black Jew, and it's through his rapping, his writing, his poetry that he found a sense of self-esteem and inner strength. And I think that Kalkidon has several portraits in the show, and you can see how there's a presence about him, a strength that he may not have had that comes out through Kehinde's, you know, encouragement. But one of the things I was going to say, Kehinde in the last 6 months was in North Africa, and he literally got along with his crew and had an interpreter and these young guys playing football and along the beach, and have them say, well, you know, ask this guy. He looked kind of interesting to me. And you could see they were a little bit shy. And then when the models were finally brought in and he would show them the paintings, they would, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I could be there. That could be me. And it's just, as I say, in a very small way, yeah. Just seeding some sense of strength and inner strength and self-esteem in these young people.
Excellent. There's another question. You mentioned trying to draw out some of the decorative elements that may have been considered women's work. Is there any other way that Kehinde Wiley addresses women's equality or women's issues, or does he focus primarily what we've been discussing?
He hasn't specifically addressed women's issues. And actually, one of the interesting questions that come up several times is, how come he doesn't paint women? And actually, to be I don't think this is a major part of any discussion, but he's a gay African-American man. So I think he is attracted to the handsomeness and the exotic beauty of many of the men that he paints. But I think about a year ago, he did create a series of portraits of African-American women, and it was in his last show in New York City.
Okay, okay. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. We are talking today with Karen Tsujimoto, curator of the Contemporary Jewish Museum, about the art of Kehinde Wiley, showing through May 27th. I'm Gina Bellaria. So I want to turn now to talk a little bit about curating itself. I'm sorry, one more question. What is your favorite Kehinde Wiley work?
Ooh, that'd be a hard one. I can't. It's like when people ask me, what is your favorite? If you could take home a work from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which work would you take? I love it all.
That's fair. That's fair. As a curator, how do you go about making the choices for what to exhibit? That really will... decide whether things sink and rise.
Right. Well, often it varies depending on whether it's a historical show when the artist is not alive or whether it's a contemporary living artist. And my way of working with living artists is to work in a very collaborative way, because I feel that if the artist is not happy with the end result, that it does nobody any good. And I think, so in this case, working with Kehinde and his studio manager and trying to find the right balance of works for the show in terms of, as I say, the ethnographic, spread, the cultural spread, and also just even selecting the Judaica that were in the show. We borrowed Torah art curtains and some historical paper cuts from the Magnus Museum and also from the Skirball in Los Angeles. And so we were going back and forth talking about which of the works that we think would complement his paintings the best. To me, that's one of the great pleasures of being in the museum profession, is that I learn something every time I work in a show. I work with a new artist. It brings me a new perspective. It brings a new perspective on life, and that's one of the thrills of my business.
Is there a through line to the choices you've made? Like, is it always like this has to meet this, or some sort of gut instinct? Even though the works you may have curated are quite different, what do you think is common among them?
I guess it's always to show the artist to their best advantage. Yeah. And when I've done historical shows, it's looking, with a sense of both historically and in a contemporary sense, and what is the best way to tell the story to make it fresh, pertinent, and meaningful, and contribute to art history. With a contemporary artist, it is, to my way of thinking, is I'm their advocate and thinking this is important art to share. I want to do the best I can for the artist and the institution.
Excellent. There's a question from a member of the audience. As curator specifically for the Contemporary Jewish Museum, did you have to learn, and I don't know what your religious background is or cultural background, but did you have to learn more about Jewish culture before accepting your position, or is it just the fact that you're so good with art and curation?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I like to tell people that I am not Jewish. I'm a third-generation Japanese. But what I love about being at the Contemporary Jewish Museum is that I'm discovering my Jewish roots. And another reason why I like the museum profession, it is lifelong learning. And the experience of the Contemporary Jewish Museum is affording me this in a very grand and meaningful way. And I knew only rudimentary things about Judaism when I joined the staff, but I feel I've been greatly enriched by my colleagues and what I've read, and as I move forward in organizing shows for the institution.
Excellent. Is there? Do you take any sort of different approach? You've curated for very different institutions, MoMA, the Oakland Museum, and the Jewish Museum. Do you take any type of different approach when you're curating for these different places?
Well, I think, no, it's basically the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, which is a very broad-based modern art museum, so you go from Picasso all the way to a very contemporary artist. So I just channel my energies looking at this broad perspective. The Oakland Museum of California, we focused on California artists, and I felt it important to really celebrate the achievements of California's artists, because if the Oakland Museum didn't do it, doesn't do it, nobody else will. And at the Contemporary Jewish Museum, it is what I'm excited about, being being new to Jewish culture, history, and ideas, is to, as I say, maybe bring a slightly different lens onto the art experience and the cultural experience that maybe opens the door a little wider, as I say.
Okay, great. And you mentioned earlier young people. So on that note, how does modern technology play into how you curate today? Social media, computers, other technology?
Well, I'm an old-fashioned person. I still use a pencil with a eraser tip. But fortunately, we have a very wonderful, young, and enthusiastic staff that are in charge of our website, social media, and the new web technology.
Oh, that's good. Is there an artist that you dream of curating?
Oh, that goes back to the question of what artwork do I like the best.
Oh, sorry. A group of artists.
There are many. No. I think there are, one of the challenges, there are many deserving artists. But for lack of time, money, and space, I think all museum curators would be doing more and showcase and celebrating art and culture.
Yeah. What's coming up next at the museum?
We'll be opening an exhibition on the photographs of Allen Ginsberg, which is going to be very exciting. Many of you probably know Allen Ginsberg. He's a well-known beat poet who established his reputation with the poem Hal right here in San Francisco. That exhibition opens May 22nd, and then a month later we'll be opening a major exhibition in collaboration with the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art entitled Beyond Belief, 100 Years of the Spiritual in Modern Art. As some of you may know, the San Francisco Museum of Art is closing in June for about 3 years as they go on a major expansion, and they are embarking on a collaboration with many cultural institutions in the Bay Area, sharing their collections and their resources, and the Contemporary Jewish Museum is very fortunate to be the first project to be kicking off this collaboration. Mm-hmm. We'll be borrowing many of their major artworks and showcasing them through a spiritual lens that's also framed by Jewish theology. So, for example, many of the artworks that you would see at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art that march along in kind of the art historical way, from surrealism to abstract expressionism to minimalism. Well, we're stirring the pot up, and we're going to look at these artists' work through a spiritual lens. And it'll be painting, sculpture, photography, video art, and installation art.
Wow. And on the other side of things, Kehinde Wiley, is he working on anything new now that you're aware of?
Well, he's always out exploring and street casting.
Yeah.
I know that, the most recent, as I mentioned earlier, he is wanting to open a studio in Senegal. Mm-hmm. And also, I think he has some early plans to also have an artist in residency program.
Okay.
Where he would invite artists of color to stay there and kind of find their roots, as I understand.
So he's not just making art, he's actually trying to build.
Yes.
That's amazing. So I have an interesting question from an audience member. What happens if you take the hip-hop out of Kehinde Wiley's work? Is that possible?
I think that's a difficult question, because if you take the hip-hop out of Wiley's work, then you wouldn't have Wiley's work.
Yeah. So what do you hope people take away when they come to the museum? What do you hope that they take away from that, from either Kehinde Wiley or the museum itself?
Well, for me, being an art historian and seeing a lot of work over the years, and particularly what's going on in contemporary art, I love the idea that you have an artist addressing traditional portraiture. You don't see that often these days. And I find his work beautiful and very thought-provoking. Once you get past the beauty and the decorativeness, if you take your time and kind of start thinking about what he's painting, or if you read the catalogs, I think there's more to think about than most people give him credit for. I know that he's been criticized for having studio assistants and, oh, the paintings are too beautiful. But I think he's a much wiser, smarter artist dealing with bigger issues than some people give him credit for.
Okay, excellent. Our thanks to Karen Sugimoto, curator of the Contemporary Jewish Museum. We also thank our audiences here on radio, television, and the internet. I'm Gina Baleria, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you.